Blog Talk Radio.
You've been searching for answers, wandering in the dark, looking for that glimmer of light that resonates with your soul and spirit. As you step into this new era that some indigenous people refer to as the Rainbow Bridge, without a compass, without a guide, yet needing some help to navigate your way through this spiritual maze. Look no further. We've got the map. The Searcher's Roadmap. Now here's your host for the Searcher's Roadmap, Rhonda Harris.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on what your time zone is. We're going to go over the myths of the ancestors, a journey into African healing tradition with Dr. Ella McDaniel. Using her stories and personal accounts of events, Dr. McDonald will guide the listeners on a personal journey of adventure, deep love, loss, and grief, only to return to wholeness and the importance of our ancestors in our daily lives. This week will be covering the calling of the ancestors, and this is a new series that will be aired twice a month, and our next airing will be October 9th, and then every 2 weeks after that. So, hello, Dr. Ella McDonald.
Hi, Rhonda.
How are you doing?
Nice to be here. I'm doing pretty well, thank you.
Great.
The world is a bit crazy, but I'm doing pretty well.
Yeah, the world's been really crazy lately. From what I've been able to see and hear on the news, I'm kind of away from it quite a bit now, but the little bit I get is like, it's just getting crazier and crazier. So
yeah, it's not making a whole lot of sense anymore.
No, it isn't. So you've been trained as an African shaman. Could you tell the listeners your background and how you got involved with doing this type of work?
Yes, back in the early 90s, I was invited to South Africa. And at that time, I was still a practicing psychologist. So I went over on a holiday. And the beauty over there and the people, and it was just a wonderful experience. And that was in September of 94. And then I came back to the United States and began to get ill. And at that point in time, I had had no exposure. I didn't even know what a Sangoma was. I'd just gone over there on a holiday. So I became pretty ill. And then one of my friends was moving to South Africa, and they encountered some Sangomas over there, which is, it means in Zulu, it means the one who rides the drum. And I had also gone to many medical practitioners here in the States. I'd gone to theologians, psychologists. No one could seem to help me. So my friend said, why don't you come and see, you know, what's over here? So I went to South Africa. I ended up living there for 15 years after that. But what ended up happening is he took me to a Sangoma, and I was kind of at my wit's end and just about ready to give up on life. And so the Sangoma was a Caucasian man who had been raised in Botswana, which is a country right above South Africa in a city called Gaborone. And I went to visit him in his hut, his healing hut, and he spoke English. And he threw the bones for me. And the bones are a way of divination that the African healing tradition uses to give them insight into the person that's sitting in front of them. And when he threw the bones, one of the bones jumped in my lap. The bones are things like coins, rocks, trinkets, maybe a chicken bone or two or a monkey tooth or something like that. So there was a conglomeration of things that he threw. Anyway, one of the things, the bones, jumped in my lap. And he started laughing. And I, you know, said, what's going on? He did speak English. His ancestry was from the UK, and his family had moved there to Botswana as diplomatic, from the diplomatic corps. But he had become a Sangoma, and his brother also became a Sangoma, and that's who I ended up training with. So that's just a little segue. Anyway, back to the bones. The bone jumped in my lap, and he started laughing. And I said, what's going on? And he says, well, one of the reasons you're so ill is you've got the calling of the ancestors. And I didn't even know what that was or what that meant. And he said, well, what the ancestors do is they will make a person ill until the person listens to their calling and actually goes and gets trained to do the ancestral work, which is to become a healer. In that tradition, it would be a Sangoma. So I said, okay, well, what does that entail? And believe me, I had tried many, many, many things in the West, including Europe and the United States, to feel better. I just had no energy. I lost the will to live. I was cold and flu all the time. So he said, well, you have to come and live in Botswana and live in this compound, this African compound, like they call them kraals, where they have several huts, grass top huts, and a wall around them, and you have a baba or a father that takes care of you, and the trainees are called Twasanas. Twasana, the word means, it's a Zulu word again, it means a rebirth. So you have to come basically and be reborn in this tradition and take up the cloth, so to speak, or take up the life of a Sangoma, and you're supposed to serve the people and get this training. And it takes anywhere from 6 months to 7 years, depending on how fast you go. Well, I didn't want anything to do with that. So I said, well, okay, but I really don't want to do that. And he said, okay, well, you know, do what you need to do. And so I decided I was going to come back to the U.S., and I did. And then I got sicker, and I started having bad dreams. I started having African people chasing me. I broke out with sores on my back and my arms. I had major back issues to the point where I could barely walk. So it kind of scared me. I thought, okay, well, this is it. I'm going to die. So I called my friend back up, and they said, well, come back and, you know, see what happens. And I went back, and I had come to my wits end, and I said, okay, I'll go and train as a Sangoma. That's how desperate I was. So I moved up to Botswana. I moved. We were only allowed to have a particular kind of dress and very minimal personal items. We could have a toothbrush. We had a mattress with a blanket. We had a little aluminum or tin pan that we could use to wash with. And I started training as a Sangoma. And that's basically how I got involved in the path in the first place. It wasn't something I said to myself, gee, I think I'll go to Africa and become a Sangoma. I did have in the back of my mind, however, the Carlos Castaneda has always been a big influence on my life. I don't know if you know who he is, but he was a writer in the early 70s, and he's probably the first person I ever came in contact with or read. He wrote like 21 books about a non-ordinary reality, a reality that exists other than the one that we live on a day-to-day basis. And he wrote about his teacher, Don Juan, down in Mexico, and a journey that he went on to open up his life. And he was actually a master's student at the at Berkeley, and that's how he got involved in it. So the ancestors have all kind of strange ways to get people involved. A typical way in Africa for the African people is they'll have a child, like in the teenagers. And the teenagers, when the puberty starts, I was a bit older, so I'd already been through puberty since it was only a few years ago. But typically in Africa, the ancestors' call comes in your teenage years, and you're called from the family, and you usually have all kinds of issues, and the family will send them to a Sangoma to find out if they have the calling. And if they go and they do have the calling, they'll join into this training. If they do not take the calling, it can hurt the whole family. It's a family situation that happens when this when they get the calling. The family can get ill. The person that's called can even contact some kind of horrible situation and have an accident or something. So it's taken quite seriously over there when someone gets the calling. Being Scottish and Caucasian and from the West, I had none of this background and I knew nothing what was going on. So this was a complete surprise for me to be called into this tradition when I lived in Arkansas. And I was raised in, the South. I lived on the West Coast, but, for the ancestors to call me was quite a surprise.
I'm sure it was, and to be in Africa and be told that you have the calling and you're not even sure what that calling meant, it had to be kind of horrifying, but yet to get that sick, it makes us come to our knees where we are willing to look at all avenues rather than, cutting the avenues out.
Yes, I was at that place. And what I have right now, I have a piece of writing that I did when I eventually came back to the States after 15 years that kind of describes the environment of where mm-hmm. I was. It kind of describes South Africa and where it was. Mandela had just been released from prison. There was a lot of good things going on in South Africa at that time. So if you don't mind, I'd like to read it to the audience, if that's all right.
Sure, that would be great.
Okay. The title of this piece is called Somewhere in Africa. When I wrote this is when I just arrived back. A year has passed since my departure from the continent of Africa. I spent the majority of my time in sub-Saharan in South Africa and Botswana. Only now do I feel I can begin to share my stories from when I was living in the rich tapestry of this mainland, experiences that has forever altered my perception of life. My departure took me 5 years from Africa. I returned again and again for visits in order to convince myself leaving was necessary. Even now, in my quiet times, I close my eyes and I am there. The smell of the bush, the taste of the food cooked over open fires, the singing and dancing of the Khoisa and the Swana people and the Zulus, the cool breezes from Antarctica, the warm winds of the Kalahari Desert and the ancient ways of the people capture my attention. I was born and educated in the United States. My most recent ancestral lineage is Northern European of Welsh, Irish, and Scottish descent. I say the most recent because now genetic studies sponsored by National Geographic tell us all human beings descended from a small group of indigenous people known as the San or the Bushmen approximately 60 or 150,000 years ago in southern Africa. You can find this study and get your own DNA analyzed and discover your ancient genetic heritage and the journey they took out of Africa. The website to do that is nationalgeographic.com, and then you click on the Genographic Project. I think it costs around $100. The opportunity to live and share in the experience of Ma Africa for 10 years deepened my senses, expanded my cultural awareness. In South Africa alone, there are 11 official languages and hundreds of ethnic groups. Nelson Mandela nicknamed South Africa the Rainbow Nation in honor of its diversity of cultures, religions, races, and climates. The struggle between the First World powers for Africa's natural resources has been an ongoing battle, causing pain and suffering for many that are poverty-stricken. The early days of the French, English, Dutch, and Portuguese traders sailing around the Cape of Good Hope was filled with conflict for control. Battles over the soil, diamonds, and gold of the Congo and West Africa are current to this day. The primary ethnic groups in South Africa are the Bantu, who migrated from the north. The indigenous Hottentot Khoi, or the San Bushmen of the Kalahari Desert, the colored, who are a mix of the Caucasian and Negro races, the Afrikaners, who are French and Dutch descent, and the English and the Portuguese. There is also a large East Indian population that long ago was imported as slaves to cultivate the sugarcane of Eastern Africa. With these power struggles and cultural diversity, there arose a fusion of nature-based spirituality blended with Christianity and mingled with the Hindu and Muslim religions. The one thing all the religions had in common was the belief in the bloodline or the ancestry and the connection to the creating source. In the beginning, the connection brought about a dark and nefarious dimension. It still to this day can operate on superstition, fear, and sometimes anger. People can become ill or receive bad luck from curses and black magic and jealousy. The African shamans, known as sangomans or traditional doctors, are called upon for assistance when these maladies are suffering from the people. From this perspective, the word witch doctor can be understood. The sangomas provide relief from the witch curses and black magic. The word sangoma means the one who rides the drum. They are considered diviners and healers. The sangomas are greatly respected and most of the time sought for guidance before any Western medicine. Cultural anthropology tells us that the view of the world is defined differently in different cultures. People have different customs, they believe in different gods and goddesses, they have different expectation and perception of life, and different afterlife fates. What might be considered a psychological diagnosis of mental illness here in the West would be considered a spiritual awakening or calling somewhere else in the world. The problems of poor health and bad luck in another culture would take into account that spiritual healing or an offering to appease the ancestors or perhaps an environmental cleansing would be necessary. The resident medicine person makes these decisions. Knowledge and values shared by a society may view space and time in arcs and waves and circles rather than linear as we do in the Western dimensions and thought. Cause and effect are not always rational or logical, but governed by energetic dimensions. Mankind is considered an equal, not superior, to any sentient being is the common view among the indigenous people. The earth is seen alive in all creation, a network of energy that communicates and responds to us as we do it. We here in the West know something of these words because of the stories, myths, and legends. However, until one dives into these experiences, they simply remain enigmas, theories, and mysteries driven by fear and doubt to the Western mindset. I have participated and experienced firsthand the depths of the African spirituality and mystery. I have grown to understand and become familiar with concepts and terms such as sangoma, which means shaman, diviner, healer, Inyanga, which means herbalist, ancestors, bush medicine, ritual, and community. The main reason for me to have looked carefully at a different perception of life, other than the view in which I was born, lies in the fact that my life experiences were not making any sense to me. Poor health and bewilderment dominated my existence. Western medicine, psychology, theology could not give me the relief that I needed from the condition from which I suffered. I learned much later from my African teachers that my malady was termed soul sickness or call of the ancestors. I came to understand that I inherited this condition from past generations, from those that came before. It seems that family lines pass on iniquity for all, no matter the culture of origin. The children inherit the sins of the fathers, as they say. Our inheritance can be seen in many ways. For example, talents, physical stature, hair color, longevity, productivity, to certain proclivity to certain diseases, both physical and emotional. That is, schizophrenia, manic depression, suicidal tendencies, alcoholism, violence. These conditions and others have been proved genetically. Based on that premise, if it is true that all of us have inherited genes, DNA, chromosomes, etc., from those that came before us, then surely we have been bequeathed social conditioning, emotional, physical, behavioral patterns as well. We may think our bodies are ours, our mind is ours, and all of our thoughts are ours, and many of them were probably handed down through generation of family lines and lives. With this awareness, we can now make decisions based on present time information. We can make different decisions than our grandmother or grandfather made. For example, if violence runs in the family without conscious attention, violence will repeat after without awareness. This type of soul sickness is simply not recognized here in the West. Someone that had my symptoms of an inability to form meaningful relationships, depression, fear, nightmares, intolerable back and head pain might be diagnosed, hospitalized, medicated, and forgotten. This easily could have happened to me. All I had to do was follow the ones in authority. They told me what to do, what medications to take, what to eat, where I could live, my abilities. And I did that for a long time. All the while, there was a small, constant voice deep inside me that kept saying, "There is more, there is more, there is more." I felt the tiny voice stirring, but was unable to act on it because of my fear and confusion. I clung to that inner knowing as if my life depended on it, and it did. Eventually, I slowly recovered some of my health. At that point, traveling became a way of life and a means of escape from my internal torment. Traveling was healing, disorienting, and wonderful. One of the many places which I traveled was Africa. When the giant 747 of the South African Airlines touched down in Johannesburg, a strange yet familiar feeling engulfed me. It felt as if ancient skeletons stirred in the cupboards of my psyche. Visions, memories, and body sensations told me that I was in the right place. I managed to calm my internal messengers. I remembered that the origins of humanity were centered deep in the belly of this vast land. My intuition told me that healing I so desperately needed and wanted was here, somewhere in Africa. So that is kind of the journey that got me into the African healing tradition in the first place.
Sounds like it's been a very personal journey, with a lot of emotion and clarity that came to you.
Yes, very much so. Very much so. This journey is not for everyone, and I don't think most people in the West would have taken it. That seemed to be the way I was directed, so I followed it. I call it these days, I call it going with the flow. And to this day, today, being aware of the ancestors and being aware of the things that make up who I am today, it makes a huge difference in the way that I see life and the world.
So since then, and you've done this initiation and you were there for so long, how do you continue with that spiritual realm now that you're back in the States?
You mean the spiritual realm of the ancestors?
Uh-huh.
Okay, yeah. That was a problem in the beginning. My mother became ill. It's one of the reasons that I returned to the States. And so when I came back, she got back into good health. And here I was, do I go back? That's one of the reasons I kept going back and forth and back and forth, because I didn't feel, well, I mean, the African healing tradition is just not known here. And
mm-hmm.
people don't understand it. And after I came back, I did go back, and I set up a Sangoma practice there in Cape Town. I had my own little healing hut. I had customers that would come to see me. I would roll the bones just like the fellow did for me. I wore the beads, the dress, and I became engulfed in that that way of thinking and that way of living. And then after a while, I realized that, or I was told or guided, that it can also be a trap, and that I actually needed to come back to the States and to integrate it into my life in a way that Western people could accept it. So I ended up coming back, and of course you can't wear the beads, have a little mud hut, and sit around throwing the bones here and expect people to take you seriously. So a friend of mine told me about yoga, and when I got into yoga, actually while I was still in Africa, but then when I came back to the States, I continued to train and learn about yoga. And what I realized about yoga is that while I was in the bush, I was dancing and singing and moving my feet and breathing in a certain way. And the ancestors during that process would come and they would give me messages or talk to me. It was almost like I was channeling or something like that. And then I realized when I got back here and I got myself into yoga, it was very physical. The African life was very physical. Yoga was also very physical, and it also used the three main things that the African healing tradition uses, which is sound, breath, and a movement. So I started getting more involved in yoga, and I noticed that I started feeling even better, and I became a yoga teacher. And then over the years, did some more research into yoga, and then I noticed that that tradition also honors the ancestors. They do it in a different way, but the ancestral thing kept staying with me. So nowadays, we honor our bodies and ourselves, which is an automatic honoring of the ancestors. We don't have to talk about the ancestors, but we can remember the ancestors. And just that remembrance gives that energy line that we carry in our DNA and our physical bodies, gives it the acknowledgement that we come from somewhere. We come from a line that has been giving to us energy, DNA, chromosomes for millions and millions of years. I did this one day. I was laying in the bathtub and because I was perplexed on how to get the ancestral knowledge to people without, you know, looking like a strange woman.
Mm-hmm.
But I was laying in the bathtub one day, and I started thinking, and I realized that I wouldn't be here if my mother and father hadn't gotten together, if my grandparents on my father's side hadn't gotten together, if the grandparents on my mother's side hadn't gotten together, and if each of those people on either side hadn't gotten together over thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years, maybe hundreds of thousands of years, that there's no way I would be here. So thinking of it like that, it opens up a whole world where we came from, and it opens up a whole world of where we're going. We didn't just come from nothing, and at the same time, we came from something. So it's a conundrum in the way, but at the same time, if people think they're just born and they came from nothing that has to do with the past, they'll get in a lot of problems in life, physically, emotionally, mentally, because there's no guidance. However, if you realize and you honor your ancestors and you remember your ancestors and you're grateful that they've contributed to your life, life takes on a different energetic system. And I guess to answer your question, that's how I convey it to others now, in a way that through yoga, through sound, breath, and meditation, through food, through herbs, through essential oils, these are things that you can still use to this day in this culture and help other people. I've been helping people all my life. My grandfather was a country doctor, and so I come from a long line of healers. My grandmother was a school teacher, so I'm kind of a doctor, school teacher, healer combination. And my own father was a kind of an herbalist, not in a professional way, but in his own way. He would go out and he would look for crystals and rocks, and he would bring home herbs, and we would cook them and eat a particular way. So this kind of thing is kind of in my blood. It's just never... it's never occurred to me, and actually while I'm talking about it right now, that I'm actually the manifestation of many, many, many thousands, 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 thousands of people that came before me. And I'm very grateful for the life that's been given me at this point, even though it has not been an easy road. And they had to get my attention through... very, in sundry ways. It's given me a life of travel. It's given me a life of exploration. It's given me a life of joy. I've met a lot of people. I've visited a lot of cultures. I've been to Tibet and India, Africa. Have not been to China, but I've been to Nepal and Tibet. I've been to the UK, all over Europe. I have not been to South America, or I have been to Mexico, but I've not done training in South America or Mexico. So, yeah, that's kind of where I am right now today as we're talking here.
So it sounds to me like you have generational knowledge that's from many thousands of years back that you didn't recognize as knowledge until you started to go through this process. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right. I was pretty oblivious. I was pretty much into money and prestige. I was a stockbroker and a banker for a while. That's where the ancestors, I guess you could say, dropped me on my knees, because that's where I got sick. I wasn't taking care of my health. I was drinking a lot. There was lots and lots of things that were wrong with me that the Western way of living, it was killing me. It was basically killing me. So I I don't think I would be here today if I hadn't followed that, those clues, those breadcrumbs, so to speak, that I was given because I had no choice. It was either die or follow that trail. And the trail led me to Africa through various and sundry circumstances. So that's how I ended up training as a Sangoma. It was not my intent there to go there. I went there on a holiday. So there are forces out there and energies out there that guide us, but if we're not going to listen, if our awareness is so narrow that we can't be open enough to have a band of awareness that takes in all the field of possibilities, as Deepak Chopra talks about, we're going to miss them, and we're going to judge them, and we're going to be afraid, and we won't move forward. As we were talking earlier when we first started this conversation, the world has gone a bit nuts right now, not just the West, but all of the world. And so there are a few people, unfortunately Dr. Wayne Dyer passed away, but he's still, you know, working from his end in his ancestral line to assist humanity. Humanity needs guidance right now. It needs people that are going to give some clues and breadcrumbs for people. We cannot do it on our own. We need assistance. Not that I have a lot of, you know, it's not like I'm saying I've got the answers, because I don't. But I do have a broad span of awareness that I can speak to people about and maybe give some clues. And then if you recognize the clues, it's up to you what you do with them or not.
And I think that's why people are searching so much for different spiritual experiences, because what they've had up until now has not fed their soul the way it does when it's a personal, generational intention of moving forward on a larger scale with your own spirituality and not staying in the box, as I call it.
Yeah, and maybe there are some people that are in the box that also that have a broad band of awareness.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but that there's some wise people out there. And in my mind, I cut all that off because I was in such a state of pain and anguish. So we need people that are conservative, and we need people that are open. We need the broad view, and we need the detailed view. It's not like you know, one is better than the other, which is mm-hmm. the duality that we're brought up in tries to convince us, good, bad, right, wrong, this, that. And that's the paradoxes need to come in. The truth, it's not just one truth, but truth need to come in so that people can choose rather than being thrown into situations that's going to generate fear for them. Right now, I'm going to talk a little politics right now, but right now fear is being generated by a lot of the candidates, fear.
Mm-hmm.
And fear is what drives people to make poor choices. It drives them into protecting themselves, to defending themselves, to not reaching out to others. I'm not saying you shouldn't be discerning, because that's why we have a mind. But at the same time, to shut ourselves down from the world, we live on this planet together with everyone else. And it's important that we realize that, just like we realize that we come from a long line of human beings that have suffered, given their lives, worked very hard in many ways to create the life that we have today. And once you realize that, you realize you are supported. You are supported in so many ways that maybe you don't recognize, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, energetically, cosmologically. So many ways we're supported.
That's so true, because I know when I was going through my own healing crisis over the last few years, it seems like the more I would go deeper into my own spirituality and into what I was recognizing as different forms of healing that I could connect with and to be guided into using and helping other people, it seemed the more I got into it, then I started to get more healthy.
Yeah, exactly. I went through a period also I wanted to stop helping people. I thought, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. And that didn't work. What happened is it's kind of a, you just show up. I had to show up and be who I was and what I'd been through. And then what ended up started happening is my presence somehow energetically was able to allow people to feel a bit better. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that is new for me to even realize, because back in the day when I was depressed and everything, I thought my presence was harmful to others. Now I'm realizing my presence actually benefits others, and that's a great affirmation for self-love, and to realize that, wow, the world would not be the same if I was not in it. There would be people that I come in contact with that you won't come in contact with, mm-hmm. and vice versa. So we each have our own gifts. It may not be a laying on of hands. It might not be something that's even, you know, like a massage or Tai Chi or yoga. It could just be you showing up and shining your own light into a room of people that need that light for that day. That's where I've kind of come to right now. And the role of transcendence or God or the ancestors or, you know, I'm not equating those things together. I'm just saying those are energies that we can tap into, just like the energy of love or the energy of hate or the energy of defense or the energy of being open to listening. Those are things that are all out there for all of us to learn how to utilize and to make the world better instead of creating the fear-mongering that's going on now with a lot of people.
And it seems like the fear-mongering is just getting bigger and bigger and keeping people where they're on the run and on, you know, traveling from country to country and not really listening to their gut or what's really going on with them. They're just so enmeshed with the fear that they can't hear the other guidance that's going on with them.
That's right. And you know what? It doesn't matter what culture you're in. You can do that in your own culture. You can do it in someone else's culture. It's a potable gift that we all have. And people spend a lot of time being busy now. They spend a lot of time in their heads, especially in the West. We live in our heads. So yoga, yoga at least gets us in our bodies, gets us in with our breath, maybe gives us some clues about what's going on with us, because until we know what's going on with us, we cannot know what's going on with the world. We can't even see others or read others. We're too busy being influenced by external circumstances.
Exactly. And a lot of times it's on that fight or flight space where you're just
exactly.
trying to survive. And when
right.
and by doing that, rather than surrendering, not realizing that that will empower you more than continuing to run from it.
That's right. And I'm teaching the stress-ace yoga now at the university here, and I have, you know, the students that are freshmen, which are in their 20s, say 20 to 25, and they come in and they're on their cell phones and they're, you know, they're very active and they're worried about their grade. And one of the things that, you know, I get them, the first thing to do is, okay, let's breathe. So we lie down and we breathe from the belly, not from the chest. If you breathe from the belly, you're toning up your vagus nerve. You're telling the body mind that you don't have to be afraid, that you're not in fight, flight, or freeze, that you're able to relax. The cerebral spinal fluid starts moving up and down the spine. Now that we know these things and it's no mystery anymore, we can actually consciously choose to get in our bodies. And our bodies are actually our pinnacle experience. If we didn't have our bodies, we could not experience spirituality. We could not experience the things that are going on. Our bodies are the pinnacle of our spiritual experience. And when we're sick and ill and hurting, our minds go into those negative places. It's very difficult to stay positive if you're sick. It's very difficult to be helpful if your body is crapping out.
Because I know for me it was really difficult to stay focused on the positive, you know, no matter how small or menial it was, you know, to find those little glimmers of light and hope, you know, when I was so sick over that two-year period. And I'm learning, you know, that those were the things that were, you know, the ancestors calling me and saying, you know, you have work to do and we don't want you to go anywhere. You need to be here and be present.
Right. They wanted more for you.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted more for you. I don't know if you're familiar with the story about King George. He developed polyuremia, polyuria, which is a kidney problem. Mm-hmm. And they called him Crazy King George, but he would do all sorts of things. Now, they didn't know he had this at the time. They just thought he was a crazy ruler who would, you know, lop people's heads off at the drop of a hat or cut their hands off or lead, you know, England into these crazy wars and make really crazy decisions. Well, come to find out, he had polyuria. And polyuria makes a person insane if it's not taken care of. So the physicians, after he died, you know, realized that he had, you know, uremic poisoning and all that. So those, it makes you wonder how many people in our ancestral lines were thought to have demons or were thought to have some kind of crazy mental disorder and threw them in asylums when they were just sick. They were just ill. They were just suffering from something that's wrong with the body. When you're depressed, it's very difficult to hang in there and be with the world.
And it's really hard to be upbeat when you feel so downtrodden. And I know for me it was a real struggle to find a reason to have hope on a daily basis. And sometimes it wasn't about finding the hope. It was about going into the darkness and then coming out of it, realizing what it taught me and what it was bringing forward to me.
Yes, we can only see after we've been through it, when we're on that road. If I hadn't had the background that I had and come through what I've already been through, there's no way that I would know that I was going through some dark night of the soul. And there's not just one dark night of the soul for people. I've had several dark nights of the soul.
Mm-hmm.
So once you're through it, you look back and go, wow, I'm a different person. There's something that shifted or happened in me that got healed. So it works like that.
Yeah, and it works so beautifully, but yet, you know, a lot of times that's where people get lost in that dark night of the soul, and they get stuck, you know, and get, you know, either institutionalized or over-medicated, you know, and they're not.
And they get caught up in their diseases. They get caught up in their physical conditions where it could be just something passing through, but then they, I've been diagnosed. I have this now. I'm not saying that's not an important thing to listen to. I'm just saying it's not always like that. Sometimes it's just passing through.
and to know when it's passing through and when it's not is sometimes very difficult, but it's that learning to reach out to other people from the other cultures and to get an idea of what's going on. I mean, like for me, I had to get to a place where I was thankful for my disease and what was going on with my body, and then things started turning. But until I could be appreciative of what I was going through and look at it as a learning lesson, it was really hard. You know, because the harder I tried to fix it, the more out of control it got.
Yes, and it's also important to know when you need Western medicine. Mm-hmm. It's very important to be able to reach out to Western medicine, that they serve so many people. But it's also important to know maybe you need Western medicine and maybe you need a little something else. Or maybe you need a little something else and you need a little Western medicine. So it's not like the duality of this is good, this is bad. It's not like that. So so this requires a person to be in touch with themselves, to be in touch with what's going on, but not always rely on the external, not always, but know that it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a place where the external and the internal merge, and then, you know, then you know you've, and sometimes they merge and then they separate again. So it's really a process of that, being able to make your way through this web of life, as we call it.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like we,
and prayer and all that stuff works, you know.
Well, yeah, and talking to your higher self and to others, you know, and reaching out and finding out that there are other ways to deal with it rather than just one way or the other. And what I'm finding a lot of lately is that we're being drawn to be more in the gray area rather than the black or white area. We're learning how to meld the two together so that we can form new relations and new ways of healing in ourselves and in others by looking in that gray area rather than trying to find it on the left or the right or in the black or the white.
Yeah, and sometimes you need both, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the ancestors or spirit or God or whatever you want to call our internal GPS goes, will put cracker crumbs in your ways and will, like, lead you to a person. I think you can call it synchronicity. Or will lead you to a place that is going to offer you something. And if you have a narrow band of awareness, you won't recognize that.
Right.
You'll miss it. Like a hawk flying across your path. You know, that could be a message.
Exactly. Or to slow down.
Or you find a stone that attracts your eye. And, you know, everything has a message. In the shamanic realm, everything has a message. Everything is connected to everything else. Now, a lot of theorists, physicists and things like that say no, especially quantum. They say only quantum works on the quantum level, which is the tiny level. It doesn't work on the macro level, which is our daily lives. But I find that, I don't find that correct. I find that it works both macro and micro.
And if any callers have questions or would like some more explanation, please call into 1-347-838-9142. Press 1 once, and I'll see you in the back, and we'll bring you into the studio so you can ask your question or comment to Dr. Ella McDonald. As we're getting down to the last 5 minutes of the show, can you tell them how to reach you and what books you've written, Ella?
Yes, my phone number is 901-457-8895. If I don't answer, please leave a message. I will get back to you. My website is stressaceyoga.com. My email is Ella, ELLA, at stressaceyoga.com. And what was the other thing you wanted me to say? I forgot.
Just how to contact
books.
You, and then
the books,
and then maybe
okay.
talk a little, yeah, and about the books, yeah.
Yeah. So the books about the ancestors that I wrote is called Myths of the Ancestors, a journey into the African healing, a personal journey into the African healing tradition. I've also written Are You Too Emotional? Are You Emotionally Deaf? It's a book about a journey into using eye movements and body movements to help release stress from the system. And then my most current book is The Yoga of Natural Stress Control, which I've co-written with my associate in Australia. So, yeah, so those are my three main books. I've written many manuals and things like that, but those are the three main ones.
And then can you let people know about what our next show will be about on October 9th? The title, Tell Me All Your Dirty Little Secrets.
Yeah, that's getting more into the details of my journey into the African healing tradition. It'll be another story. It'll be about how I actually met the Babas. One of the things which is similar, like, is confession, being able to say everything, every negative thing you got going on in your life to release it and let it go. So that's what Tell Me All Your Dirty Little Secrets are about. And even secrets that you think no one else will know, you've got to come clean on all that. So that was quite a cleansing process, and I'll be going into more of those, that kind of detail. It's a more detail. Today was a general introduction. So
right.
Yeah, so that's what that's about.
Well, we are almost out of time, and if you have any questions for me or Ella, you can send them to searchersroadmap@gmail.com or to Ella's email. And what is it again, Ella?
It's ella@stressaceyoga.com.
Okay, and with that, our show is done for the day, and please join us again next week. We'll be having other speakers. Fran Shaw and Jean Slater will be next week, and then the following week will be Ella and Summer Jones. On October 9th will be Ella coming back and talking to us more about Tell Me Your Dirty Little Secrets and looking at ways we hide our pain and our anguish, and sometimes that adds more pain and anguish to our lives on a daily basis. So
that's
if you
right.
would,
and we hide
please,
it from ourselves.
Exactly. That's what exactly. We hide it from ourselves, much less from others. Sometimes we don't even know what we're hiding until we get to look at
right.
it.
That's right. That's right.
And so we are looking forward to doing another show with you. And thank you, listeners, for listening. You can download this in about 10 minutes after the hour, and it will be available for download, so you can re-listen to it and be prepared for the next show on October 9th. And this will be a series of six going from September 25th to December 11th of this year. And we really appreciate your interest and your input, so please email me at searchersroadmap@gmail.com. And we will be back with you in another week on Thursday, and then on Friday of next week as well. So please look into what I'm doing for shows. And thank you so very much, Ella, for coming in and interviewing with me today.
Thank you, Rhonda. See you later.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.